Hey guys, welcome to the show. I'm Heather Bigley, and this is our audio-only version of the show. We've been having some issues with Spotify. If you'd like to have the whole experience, including video clips and images of our guests and me having a chat, then you should head over to YouTube. Our YouTube channel is www.youtube.com/voiceoverpod. Thanks. Hope you enjoy the show.
You do not have to go and build huge skyscrapers and have your name in the history books to be an important person and to have lived a good, meaningful life.
Merry Christmas and welcome to VoiceOver, Movies That Move Us. I'm your host, Heather Bigley, and I talk to people about the movies that made a mark, that led to what we're calling cinematic epiphanies. And for today's Christmas episode, we're talking about It's a Wonderful Life. Now, I know that so many of you know this movie, but I also know that we tend to forget that the main character, George Bailey, is contemplating suicide. That's the whole point of the film. So if you're contemplating suicide or you know someone who is, I want you to get help. And you can do that by calling the suicide hotline, 988. And also consider whether now is the best time to listen to this episode for you. My guest today is Brian Tanner. He is the producer of Kaboom, which is an anthology audio drama podcast for kids, which has also won 4 Signal Awards, including Best Kids Podcast, Best Road Trip Podcast, and Best Fiction Writing. Stay tuned after the discussion for movie recommendations. When I asked you what would be your movie, you were like, Well, this one.
And you said, we're doing a Christmas episode. Yeah. And I'm just like, well, this is probably the movie I would bring anyway, so right. It's perfect. I was a teenage cinephile. So I started with Hitchcock, but I also really like Jimmy Stewart. So I just kind of was like, what other movies has he been in? And I started seeing a lot of Frank Capra movies, the same director as It's a Wonderful Life. They worked together several times. You Can't Take It With You in 1938, Best Picture winner. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, iconic performance by him. And It's a Wonderful Life. And
which I think we should say, It's a Wonderful Life is the first movie that both Capra and Stewart did when they came back from World War II.
Yeah.
And Stewart was in the Army at that time, in the Air Force, but it was part of the Army. And he was a pilot for 4 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so this is the movie that he comes back to do.
Yeah.
Which is so fascinating to me to think about that experience and potential trauma that he might have suffered showing up on screen.
And to be honest, when I saw It's a Wonderful Life for the first time, I thought, that was nice. It didn't hit me. I knew, like, this is supposed to be some big sentimental classic favorite. It was fine. Something the movie hinges on is that Jimmy Stewart is driven to the brink of suicide in this, and then he is pulled back by heavenly forces. And when I was in high school, one of my friends that I had grown up with, we attended church together, we were in scouts together, we went to school together, I'd known him forever. Great guy, everybody loved him, on the basketball team, really popular. Just no warning signs whatsoever, he committed suicide.
Oh, wow.
It was so jarring to me and to everyone. No one saw it coming. The night that the news came out, they just put out this call saying, like, hey, if anyone needs to talk to anyone about this or wants to be with other people, go to the church tonight. And so I show up at the church, and there are hundreds, maybe even like 1,000 people. Like, they had to keep opening up those like barrier walls to like let more and more people. We filled up the chapel. We filled up the gym. It was just like every room was just full of people. It was just astonishing to me how many people were there and how many people knew Devin, how many people had been touched by him, how many people were feeling his loss now that he was gone. And it wasn't that much longer after this that I revisited It's a Wonderful Life. And man, the movie hit really, really differently after that experience. Because watching the final scene when people come streaming in to show their love and support, and after he's had a chance to see, I really did impact a lot of people. It hit me really, really hard. You know, everyone's dealing with their demons. I don't know why he did it, but it made me wonder, like, did he know that this many people cared this much about him and that he would live this big of a hole? The movie It's a Wonderful Life was forever transformed for me. And that's been almost 30 years now since that. And every time I come back to this movie, I'm in a different part of my life. The greatest films, I think, grow in resonance. They speak to you at different times in your life. I had periods in college where I look back now and I was like, oh, that's what was happening. I was depressed, you know, and I just found myself turning to this movie, and I would frequently just watch like the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, there was something about it that would just remind me, like, no matter how hard this is, you have friends, you have loved ones, and they're rooting for you and they want you to succeed and they're there for you.
Wow, that is really beautiful. I do hope that Devin saw all these people streaming into that building.
Yeah.
I hope he saw that.
Sorry to make this really emotional off the top.
That's fine. We can cry.
This is a crying movie, I mean.
okay, so I have so many places I want to go with this. The place where I now, as an adult, cry, mm-hmm. it starts almost immediately. So we've got the young George Bailey working at the pharmacy.
Yeah.
And we realize that Mr. Gower's son has died.
Yeah.
And that he is crying alone in the back room.
Yeah.
And he's trying to put these pills together. George Bailey realizes something's wrong. So he wants to offer some kind of comfort. That's
yeah.
what kind of young man this is.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know what to do because he's been told, take these pills full of poison
yeah.
to a diphtheria patient. It's when he comes back and he hasn't taken them. And Mr. Gower is irate. And all of this anger and grief is like visited on this young boy.
What is Mrs. Blaine's voice of capsules? Didn't you hear what I said?
Yes, sir.
What kind of tricks are you playing anyway? Well, why were you right into the living room right away? Don't you know that boy's very sick?
I hear him. I saw him here.
You lazy loafer.
Mr. Gower, you don't know what you're doing. You put something wrong in those capsules. I know you're unhappy. You got the telegram and you're upset. You put something bad in those capsules. It wasn't your fault, Mr. Gower. Just look and see what you did. Look at the bottle you took the powder from. It's poison, I tell you, it's poison. I know you feel bad.
Oh.
Don't hurt my sawyer again.
Oh, no,
don't hurt
no,
my
no.
sawyer again.
Oh, George. George.
Oh, Mr. Gower, I would never tell anyone. I know your feeling. I would have felt so good to die, I would.
See how emotional yeah. this is? And literally, I was watching it this weekend, and I'm just like, oh, the tears just started. And it was
yeah.
this idea of, we don't know what people are going through.
Yeah.
People are often asked to just keep living their lives on their most painful days.
Yeah.
And if the people around them can see it and offer them some love and grace, that'll make the difference.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and that is George's superpower throughout the movie.
Yeah.
He has big dreams of his own, but he is constantly placed in situations where his own dreams are directly at odds with what is best for other people.
Right.
And he always chooses other people. So even from this young age in this scene, we start to see he is someone who has an incredible amount of empathy for the suffering of other people.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing as an adult that really hits me when I watch this movie is that George Bailey, like, he doesn't want anything wrong.
Yeah.
He just mm-hmm. wants to leave town, go to college,
yeah.
see the sights. He wants something that's good and interesting and at every turn feels like he can't choose that. He's got to choose what's best for the people around him. I want to talk about an interesting moment in the film. He goes to visit Mary, his on-again, off-again girlfriend. She's on the phone with
Sam Wainwright.
Sam Wainwright.
Hee-haw.
Most annoying
yeah.
gimmick. Oh, yep. my gosh. 15 times in the movie where I'm like, please. Oh, there he goes.
Hee-haw and and Merry Christmas, Sam Wainwright.
And they do things like that because you're watching these characters over the course of decades. Yeah. They have to have something to make them stand out.
Yeah. Reminder, this is who this guy is. So she gets on the phone with them, and she's talking to him, but, you know, they're all snuggled in close.
The chance of a lifetime.
He says it's the chance of a lifetime.
Now, you listen to me. I don't want any plastics, and I don't want any ground floors, and I don't want to get married ever to anyone. You understand that? I want to do what I want to do. And you're... Oh, Mary.
George.
Here they come!
At some point, it's funny, but it's also so painful.
Yeah.
And it's also weirdly joyous.
Yeah.
Like, I am excited for George and Mary that they got married.
Yeah.
But I completely understand George and what he's trying to say to her.
Yeah.
This is not what I want from my life.
Yeah.
At least not right now.
The movie is making the argument over the course of this. He has these dreams. He says, I want to build skyscrapers. I want to build bridges. I want to do great things.
Yeah.
In the scene at the end where he is lashing out at his family, they can't find the $8,000. He thinks he's going to prison. All of a sudden, he's looking around at his life and he's just like, what have I done with my life? In his living room are models of bridges and skyscrapers, and he takes a look at them and he smashes them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too painful for him to think, like, I had a bigger life for myself than this. But the movie is making an argument that you do not have to go and build huge skyscrapers and have your name in the history books to be an important person and to have lived a good, meaningful life.
I think for so many of us, like at this age, that's an important reminder.
Yeah.
I started going through this in my 40s where I started looking back at all those dreams I had and seeing, oh, I didn't accomplish that. What have I done, though? I had to tell myself, you have done meaningful things.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What have those been? This movie is an important balm, I think, for a lot of people. Let's bring the tears down just a little bit. Why don't we talk about these actors? Is there more to say about Jimmy Stewart?
Oh, Jimmy Stewart was on a hot streak prior to this, before joining the Army, just before he won an Oscar for Best Actor for The Philadelphia Story.
Right.
With
Catherine
Hepburn and Cary Grant.
Yes. You know?
And so he went off to war. And when he came back, he had his pick of projects, and this is the thing that he wanted to do. When we get into the period of his career, by Vertigo, it's just like, oh, he can play dark as well. But I think this is the movie where this is first showcased. He's got the gee whiz wholesome stuff going on, but he really sinks into despair. I mean, the moment when he's in the bar and he prays,
God. Father in heaven, I'm not a praying man, but if you're up there and you can hear me, show me the way, not the end of my rope. Show me the way, oh God.
It is so incredibly deeply felt.
Yeah.
With tears streaming down his face. It is one of the most real moments. Like, you feel like he is channeling something from that experience that he had there. Having many dark nights of the soul. I actually read some things about his missions. He was a flight commander and flew missions over Germany. Somebody referred to him as like an aerial quarterback that would tell other planes where to go. And he lost men where he was the one who gave the order and they died, and that haunted him. He said he brought a lot of those feelings to the movie.
I want to talk about Gloria Graham, actually, because she plays Violet Bick,
yeah,
who is like the other woman. Gloria Graham went on to do a number of film noirs and then gangster films, and she was kind of the gangster moll. Incredibly talented actress, and this movie, she gets to play a flirtatious young woman, but also then they kind of showcase the alter ego dark side. So
yeah.
I think she's an important actress that we... If you're only watching It's a Wonderful Life, if that's your only taste of a film from the 40s,
yeah,
all of these actors had so many great roles.
Yeah. Thomas Mitchell.
Yeah.
I mean, Frank Capra was famous for working with great character actors, and he just stocks his film with so many of them. Thomas Mitchell, he'd worked with him in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, other things. He was the first actor to win the Triple Crown, the Oscar, an Emmy, and a Tony.
Yeah.
You know, and he's playing Uncle Billy in this movie, and he's great. They've just stuffed the frame full of just incredibly indelible people. Lionel Barrymore, part of the Barrymore family, which includes Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore. Right? Her great uncle.
Plays Potter.
One of my favorites is Ward Bond.
Yes.
He's Bert of Bert and Ernie here in It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah. And he's basically second fiddle to John Wayne in so many John Ford movies.
Yeah.
The prodigal brother. When'd you get back? I ain't seen you since the surrender. Come to think of it, I didn't see you at the surrender.
Don't believe in surrenders. No, I still got my saber, Reverend. Didn't turn it into no plowshare, neither. Yeah.
But he's like in every gangster, war film, cowboy film for 30 years. I made a list of all the other things that he's in. The Maltese Falcon, It Happened One Night, Gone with the Wind, Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah. Like, I remember when they first released that first AFI 100 thing, the person who was in the most films on that list by far was Ward Bond.
Ward Bond.
He was a football player at USC.
Oh, so he must have known John Wayne.
John Wayne, yeah. So he was just kind of came along with his buddy John Wayne and, you know, fell into all of these classic movies.
He's in some of the best movies of the second 50 years of Hollywood. As you said, the frame is full of all of these familiar faces that people would have known, would have loved. They bring with them echoes of their other stuff. What's really surprising to me is that this film flopped.
Oh, yeah.
When it first came out.
Yeah.
Liberty, that made the film, they end up getting bought out by Paramount. Not because of the flop of It's a Wonderful Life, but they'd had a series of issues. Yeah. So this is my kind of filmy question that I want to ask. Do we love this movie as a culture? Do we love this movie because we've just seen it so many times?
Yeah. Not that it went unheralded. It did receive 5 Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
It lost most of them to The Best Years of Our Lives.
Okay. Which I know you want to talk about.
This week, as I was just thinking about those two movies side by side, but The Best Years of Our Lives, Best Picture winner, and I didn't know this until I looked it up this week. It was, at the time, the second highest grossing movie ever, only behind Gone with the Wind.
Oh, wow. You know?
But it is a movie about 3 different soldiers coming home from World War II after it is over, and they find that life has just changed. They are not the same people, and they're supposed to just be able to slot right back into their lives as they were before, and they're just like, I feel different, I'm changed, I can't relate to these people, they don't know the horrors that I've seen.
And one of the most notable things, I think, for people looking back at that movie is that one of the characters is played by a non-professional actor who had lost his hands in World War II, and he plays a soldier who's lost his hands and now is supposed to be marrying a woman that he's known for his entire life.
Yeah, and they were engaged before he left for the war.
And that's the whole discussion.
Yeah.
Do we get married? Should we get married? Notably, she says, we'll get married and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
There is no like, I love you and I will always love you and this is what I want for the rest of my life. It's, we'll see.
It's a very realistic film in that regard. And so when you look at reviews of It's a Wonderful Life, they're very mixed at the time. And something that critics keep calling out is like, Frank Capra has a very simplistic view of the world. His version of middle-class Americana is naive. And they're probably thinking of a movie like The Best Years of Our Lives. This is a searing, honest look at America post-World War II. Where are we now? And then you are giving us the same confection that you were feeding us in the 30s, and we don't want that anymore.
Right.
And so the movie just was kind of forgotten about, like you said, and in fact, its copyright lapsed in the 1970s. Television stations like PBS saw, there's this film out there by a great director that we can play for free at Christmas time. Why not? So I agree with you that there is an element to it that we love this movie because we've seen it so many times. It's a tradition. We gather the family around the TV on Christmas Eve, and this is a special movie for us. But I think that there was a big critical reappraisal of it, saying like, how did a movie like this get forgotten about? My son, was in a production of A Christmas Carol a few years ago. He played Boy Scrooge, you know, when he's like little in the flashbacks. And his reaction to the movie, he said, that was giving me Christmas Carol vibes, especially when he's shown this nightmarish alternate reality of people who don't know him and are treating him strange. He runs into a cemetery and he's standing in front of a grave and he runs up and he dusts the snow off right. to see the dates on it, to read something on it. It's exactly like Christmas Carol. And I'm sitting here watching and I'm like, how is it that I have seen this movie so many times and I've never put that together? And so he was bringing something to the movie and that was an interesting reading to layer onto it, because it's like this movie does have a lot in common with A Christmas Carol, but it's as though A Christmas Carol is happening to Bob Cratchit rather than Ebenezer Scrooge. We've got a clear Scrooge character in this yeah. movie in the form of Mr. Potter, and he is not the one being shown the vision saying like, hey, you need to change your ways. It is the fundamentally decent person who's done everything right. At the beginning of the movie, we're seeing the cosmos
yes.
and the flashing stars, which is a little cheesy, let's admit, but it's kind of perfect. You
right.
know, they bring in Clarence, who will be the guardian angel, and say, there's a man who needs help. He says, oh, no, is he sick? And he says, no, worse, he's discouraged. Unlike A Christmas Carol, where he's being shown something because it's like, you need to change your ways. It's like, we need to intervene. I mean, fundamentally, this is a movie that believes in the power of prayer. I mean, it opens with a series of prayers.
Yeah.
You talked about your crying moment with Mr. Gower. Mine starts immediately. You hear these voices and they say,
I owe everything to George Bailey. Help him, dear Father.
Joseph, Jesus, and Mary. Help my friend, Mr. Bailey.
Help my son, George, tonight.
He never thinks about himself, God. That's why he's in trouble.
George is a good guy. Give him a break, God.
I love him, dear Lord. Watch over him tonight.
Please, God, something's the matter with Daddy. Please bring Daddy back.
And I get choked up just talking about it. Just thinking there are other people out there that have my needs in mind when I'm in a period of darkness, if I allow people to see that. If you keep it hidden, they won't know.
Right.
You know, but like the character of Mary has told everyone, like, George needs your help tonight. And the people in this pray, and George prays in the bar, and because of that, the heavens listen, and they intervene on his behalf.
When you're talking about that, I think that's brilliant, that this is the Christmas Carol happening to Bob Cratchit, and it's not his ways that need to be changed. It's his heart that needs to be healed.
Yeah.
Not mm-hmm. only just from all the discouragement he's faced, but also from the way that he keeps assessing himself.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I should have done more, or I should have been greater, or I should have been. And essentially, he's being told, this is enough and it's good. And you need to value it just as much as your wife values it.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that comes out in this movie, it's the really distinct gender roles of
yeah.
Mary, who wants the home. She wants to resuscitate, if you will, or resurrect, if you will, this old manor
yeah.
and make it into a beautiful home filled with children.
Yeah.
In fact, in the VO, when we're doing the flashbacks, it's like
Mary had her baby, a boy. Then she had another one, a girl.
Yeah. And you're like, well, George was there.
Yeah.
Like,
uh-huh.
They had them together.
Yeah.
But in fact, I think the movie is saying, no, Mary was doing all of this, trying to make this beautiful home.
Yeah.
George is still fantasizing about, oh, I want to go build that bridge. I want to
yeah.
go build that skyscraper.
Yeah.
And for good or for evil, the movie is trying to say to George, it's okay to be a domesticated man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In my theory classes, we'd take that and we'd run with that
yeah.
statement.
Yeah.
But
but I do give the movie credit. I mean, this is an almost 80-year-old movie, and it has what we would consider now like some old-fashioned gender politics in it. But Mary has so much more agency than you might see
yeah.
in other people. Like you say, she's the one driving their relationship. She's the one who like selects the home that they're going to live in, and she builds it. And at the end, when all of the money comes miraculously in, she's the one who's put out the call. She's the one who saved the day. And it is quite regressive, the alternate reality, when it's like the worst thing that could possibly happen to a woman is, she's not married. And
she's a librarian.
And she's wearing glasses, you know, like, but I do think she has much more agency.
If you look at audience tickets, et cetera, sales, films at this time are aimed at women in a way that they aren't in the 1970s, in the 1980s. There's this idea at the time that women would go to the movies and then they would say to their husbands, boyfriends, children, this is a movie you're going to love. I'm going to take you back. It's like Rear Window. Mm-hmm. Who's the active character in that movie?
Yeah.
Well, it's not Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah. He is by definition locked into a single room.
Yes. He's on his butt with a broken leg.
Yeah.
And it's his girlfriend, right, who's running around and making everything happen.
Yeah.
Women saw themselves as active people, of course.
Yeah.
Right? At the time. And the movies are just reminding them, like, you should spend a little bit more ticket dollars on this because we understand who you are. Okay. All right. Is this a movie you would recommend to people?
Oh, wholeheartedly.
What would you say?
Absolutely. I'd walk into the conversation thinking, this person has at least heard of this movie. And the most famous image from this movie is Zuzu at the end saying,
look, Daddy, teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
And I think people get an impression of this movie that it is so saccharine. Yeah. And to be fair, there are saccharine bits of this movie, but the movie is so much more than that. Like this, there's so much more darkness in this movie, and there's so much more of a complex investigation of, I had dreams for my life, and my life hasn't gone the way that I thought that it would. If films are a mirror, and we're able to see, oh, here's a character who has had that happen to them as well, and they've had a worthwhile life, and they're a good person. I think there's something really life-affirming about that.
So Brian and I cried a lot. but that just goes to show how meaningful this movie is to both of us, and it is to so many people. It's the holiday season, and later on in the holiday season, I'm going to be talking about Christmas movies. Right now, I want to recommend three movies for you to watch so you can get to know these actors just a little bit better. The first one is Rear Window. This stars Jimmy Stewart, and it's a Hitchcock film. We referenced it in our interview. You've got to see this. It's Hitchcock in his glamour period. The film stars Grace Kelly as Jimmy Stewart's right-hand gal and girlfriend. It's about the two of them trying to solve a murder in Jimmy Stewart's apartment complex. It also has character actor Thelma Ritter, who is just gold anywhere she goes, and she has all the best lines in this film. If you want to see more of Gloria Graham, I totally recommend In a Lonely Place. It comes out about 4 years later, and she's co-starring with Humphrey Bogart. It's a really great performance by Bogart himself, but Graham here is just glorious, if I may. She's a marvel. The interesting tidbit about this film is that it's directed by her husband, Nicholas Ray, who himself is an icon of Hollywood cinema, but they were going through a divorce at the time. So lots of behind-the-scenes gossip on this movie. Ultimately, though, it's a great film that showcases Gloria Graham's ability to go really deep and really dark as she tries to understand who her new boyfriend is. Is he a serial killer? If you want to see more of Donna Reed, then you have to check out From Here to Eternity, which came out in 1953, and she actually won the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her role as a hostess at a private club on Oahu in the run-up to the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. I think today the film is a little uncomfortable for modern audiences. Our ideas about a number of things have changed, but Donna Reed herself is incredibly riveting, and this movie shows what she can do that is in a lot of ways very different from what she's doing in It's a Wonderful Life. And so happy Christmas from those of us at VoiceOver. VoiceOver is produced by BYU Radio and edited by Spencer Boyer. I'm your host, Heather Bigley.